Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, starting the show today by talking with you about land trusts in Wisconsin. Mike Carlson back with us. He's the executive director of Gathering Waters. And as we talk with Mike, I hope you'll join in. Are you involved in a Wisconsin land trust? Tell us about your experience. Questions, I hope you'll join in. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Mike Carlson, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Good morning, Larry. Yes, great to be with you again. Thanks so much for having me on.
You know, for those who aren't sure about what a land trust is, I think we should probably start by talking about land trust. Have you explain a land trust for us?
Sure. And for any of your listeners that are not sure what a land trust is, know that you're not alone. It's certainly a topic that I think, we're hopeful that we can help spread the word and make more people aware of land trust. But certainly, again, if folks don't know what they are, you're not alone in that. But to start with, what a land trust is, when we say land trust, or we might use the term land conservancy as well, really what we're talking about are nonprofit organizations that have a primary mission of protecting land. So they might be protecting land for any number of different reasons, right? It could be for wildlife habitat or for public access for trails or other kinds of outdoor recreation. Could be to protect land for water quality or to address climate change or for bird conservation, any number of different conservation priorities that land trusts have. And in Wisconsin, we're really fortunate to have just over 40 independent nonprofit land trust organizations that are operating, in pretty much in every corner of the state. We have a land trust that's working. And really, those organizations range in size and scope. So we have groups like the Nature Conservancy in Wisconsin that operates statewide. It has a statewide footprint. We've got land trusts like the Ice Age Trail Alliance that focuses on a resource that crosses the state. And then many of our land trust members work, maybe at the county level or even at a township level, or even, focused on a particular lake or river. So it's a wide range of groups. But again, when we say land trust or land conservancy, we're really talking about nonprofit organizations with that primary mission of protecting land.
Hmm. And where does Gathering Waters fit in? What does Gathering Waters do?
Sure. Yeah. So Gathering Waters, we're Wisconsin's alliance for land trust. So we really exist to strengthen those just over 40 nonprofit organizations. Our mission is to help land trusts, landowners, and communities protect the places that make Wisconsin special. So that really is our focus. We focus on strengthening land trusts, but we often help landowners connect with land trusts and other resources, and we often help local communities explore their options for protecting land and for partnering with local land trusts. We really like to kind of call the why behind our work, the reason why we do our work, we like to describe it as the three W's. So we call that water, wildlife, and the Wisconsin way of life. And, that's really a big driver. Those three things are a big driver behind, our mission and our work, and certainly for, basically all of our land trust members as well. So, again, we serve as a statewide association, and we have kind of three main focus areas. One is that we advocate for public funding for land conservation, and we can maybe talk about some of that work later with regard to the Wisconsin Knowles Nelson Stewardship Program. We also provide training and technical assistance to land trusts because we know that land trusts, when they're protecting someone's piece of property, that's a forever obligation. That land trust has to be there forever to protect that land. So we take it very seriously that these nonprofits are well-run and sustainable. And then the third area that we really focus on is our kind of communications and outreach and helping to raise the profile of land trust, but also helping to connect, the general public with great opportunities to get outdoors and have fun and hopefully explore some new places on land trust protected land. And again, I think we'll touch on that a bit today with our Wisconsin Land Trust Days initiative as well.
Yeah, for sure. You know, Julie has sent us an email to ask if there's a minimum number of acres that can be considered for a trust. They own a small parcel on the Wolf River, including shoreline, about an acre and a half. She adds that they observe the Wild and Scenic River guidelines, and they have observed those guidelines. So is there a minimum number? It sounds like a nice property and right on the Wolf River.
Sure. Yep. That's such a great question. And I think it's a really important thing for folks to be thinking about, that, you know, each of our land trust members are independent nonprofits. And so they have their own boards of directors, and many of them have paid staff, and they are really, careful and intentional about choosing kind of conservation priorities. I think there's a recognition that, you know, they can't do it all. They can't protect, nor would they want to protect every square inch of their service area. They really have to prioritize and focus on certain conservation issues and certain types of habitat and other regions of their service area. So it really is important when an individual landowner is interested in protecting their land that they reach out to their local land trust and really just start a conversation to learn about the land trust priorities and to talk to them about, hey, would this property kind of fit within the other priorities that you all have as an organization? That's a long answer. The short answer is no, there's not necessarily a acreage minimum. Again, I think it really relates more to the, you know, whether or not the property fits with the priorities of that particular nonprofit.
And I'm not sure exactly where Julie is, but it's somewhere along the Wolf River they have that property. How would she find out the land trust in her area?
Yep. So on our website, on gatheringwaters.org, we actually, one of the tabs at the top says protect your land. And if you hover over that, the very first option under that is find a land trust. And so you can plug in, you know, what county you're in, and it'll show you what land trusts are operating there and with contact information. And again, we field questions from landowners a lot. And that's really sort of our first step typically is to, you know, happy to share some background information about how land trusts work, but we typically really try to direct them to their local land trust to kind of start that conversation about their piece of property.
Do the rules change? I mean, I'm wondering, you know, what kind of procedures typically a person would have to go through to get their property involved in a land trust.
Yeah, so that's, and I should have mentioned that earlier, there's really two kind of main ways that land trusts protect land, kind of two main tools that they have. One way that land trusts protect land is that they can either buy land, from a voluntary landowner, buy the land outright and actually own and manage it as a nature preserve, often, you know, open to the public. Or, you know, a landowner could also choose to donate the land outright again so that the land trust is actually owning that and managing that piece of property. So that's really one way that a land trust can protect land. The other way that typically that land trusts are working with private landowners to protect properties are through a tool called a conservation easement. And a conservation easement is a legal tool where essentially a landowner will donate or sell things like their development rights and subdivision rights to the land trust. And so that then that property will be then conserved forever into the future. And then the land trust is then responsible for monitoring the terms of that conservation easement in the future and then enforcing the terms if that's necessary at some point in the future. So conservation easements and then, you know, outright kind of purchase or donation of land is really the two primary options. So if a landowner wants to continue to own and use their land, but they want to see it protected, you know, in the future and make sure there's no development or any further subdivision, then a conservation easement would be a better option. If the landowner, you know, would like to see the property kind of put into more of a public preserve and again wants to see it, you know, protected into the future, then that sort of sale or donation of the land outright would be sort of the avenue they might consider.
Yeah, and then that, because you're donating to a nonprofit essentially, that's a donation that could be deducted on your taxes, I would think.
Yep, that's exactly right. That's certainly true for donations of land outright. And then there are some special rules for a tax deductions for the donation of conservation easements. And again, you know, just like any tax matters, obviously landowners should talk to other tax professionals or an attorney about that. But that's absolutely something that could be an option for the donation of either the land or a conservation easement.
Let's take some calls. Ron in Madison, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks. I have an accepted offer on a small 71-year-old house in a different state, and the city lot is less than a quarter acre, so I'm wondering if it's worth the hassle. I hope to add solar collectors, vegetable garden plots, and then amphibians, birds, and some insects like the monarch butterfly need help surviving. And so I'm thinking of those three categories of wildlife and, you know, planting appropriate woody and annual perennial plants, you know, in the remaining space is of interest. And I don't know if it's practical to try to get involved with the land trust and if the extra expense would be worth the situation. A background, before I came to Wisconsin in the early 90s, I was a treasurer for the Ozark Regional Land Trust, and I think they had about a dozen subunits. Okay. ORTC or whatever is a IRS section 501c4, and it's the umbrella organization for the 501c3, the individual community land trusts, which probably range typically between 20 and 200 acres, typically farms, not city lots. And so I haven't been in touch with them much in the last 30 years. So I wonder if it's even practical for such a tiny area surrounding a house in a city.
What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I think truly, again, I think it's really probably the best first move would just be to reach out to that local organization and just talk to them about, is this something that, you know, fits into their priorities? I know there are certainly some land trusts, even in Wisconsin. I'll just name an example, like the Geneva Lake Conservancy is now running a program called Conservation at Home, where they're actually providing some, you know, advice to residential landowners on how they can improve their lots for things like pollinators and native plantings. And so it really, again, it sort of depends. Each land trust will have its own kind of set of programs and focus areas. But I would say reach out, reach out to that local group. That maybe just is worth mentioning just a broader point about the context for land trusts in Wisconsin that the gentleman mentioned the land trust in another state, that it's worth mentioning that across the United States, there are actually about 1,000 land trust organizations, so independent nonprofits. And each state is very different in terms of how many there are. So in a state like Minnesota and Iowa, there's really essentially kind of statewide land trust. So there's the Minnesota Land Trust and Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation. There are several other smaller land trusts as well, but primarily a statewide group. And then in other states like Illinois and Michigan and Wisconsin, and there's sort of the more local model where we've got these kind of local community-based organizations like we have here.
Hmm. Ron, thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Or you can email us to ideas at WPR.org. Mike Carlson, our guest, executive director of Gathering Waters. Jill Nadeau, our producer today. Christina Myshock, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. We're talking about land trusts on the show today. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Mike Carlson, executive director of Gathering Waters. Some callers online, some emails. Let's take a call from Eric next in Oneida County. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. I had a concern about land trust, and maybe the expert can set my concerns. As I understand it, if you donate money to a land trust, they have a tendency to like to flip those trusts to like national forests and things of such. And we all know that national forests promote mining. It's an archaic, actually, there's very archaic rules about mining in the national forest in the past, way in the past, when they were promoting mining and development of the country. So, I mean, I would be concerned for someone to think they're going to donate to a land trust and say, oh, yeah, it's going to be taken for perpetuity. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be wild. And if they flip it to a national forest, truly, it could be mined or whatever other rules the national forest would have that would not really comply with what the donator initially had in mind.
Well, Eric, thanks for calling. Mike, comment on Eric's concern.
Sure. Yeah, I think anytime really there's a kind of a donation to a nonprofit of any kind, that it really is important for donors to be very clear about their intent and to be, you know, to work very closely with the land trust on what they want to see for the future of and the purpose of that donation. I can't think of specific examples of organizations transferring property to the national forest, but several of our land trust members do have long running partnerships with local governments, counties, municipalities, and as well as the state DNR, where in some cases a land trust, because they're a nonprofit, may be in a better position to work with a particular landowner for whatever reason. Maybe the landowner doesn't want to, you know, negotiate with a government agency, or maybe they already had a relationship with the land trust. So, gosh, we have, you know, examples from around the state, you know, from the city of La Crosse would be an example. The Mississippi Valley Conservancy has had a long running partnership with the city of La Crosse, where city of La Crosse provides funding to the Mississippi Valley Conservancy, the local land trust, that is then able to bring in private dollars and state and federal dollars to match that. The land trust does the land protection work, the real estate work, and then transfers the property to the local municipality. I would say a couple of things just specifically to address the caller's concerns. I think many land trusts, before they transfer a piece of property to a government entity, they will actually retain a conservation easement on the property so that the land trust still has, in many cases, a say over and can enforce the restrictions of that conservation easement into the future. So that's one way to ensure that in the future that the conservation purposes of that property are being upheld. And then again, I think the other piece of it is just, you know, land trusts, all of our land trust members that I'm aware of are take it very seriously when their donors, you know, have a specific explicit intent, you know, for the future of the property. And certainly there are some landowners that just donate their land to a land trust and say, hey, if in the future, if you want to flip this, go ahead. That, you know, that's certainly some landowners, that's their intent. But with others, I think you can certainly talk to the land trust about, you know, gosh, I really want to see this protected. Here are sort of the restrictions I would like to put on this gift. And that's something that can be done during the, you know, negotiations over the donation.
Thanks, Eric. Appreciate the call. Ralph in Hayward emailed to ask who owns the property if you enter an agreement with a land trust. And if a land trust disbands for whatever reason, what happens to the arrangement and your property?
Sure. So that goes back to that sort of my comment about the two kind of primary ways the land trust protect land. So if a landowner were to choose to donate or sell their land outright to a land trust, then they would obviously the landowner would no longer be in control of that property, and it would probably become kind of a public preserve or park. But in the case of a sale or a donation of a conservation easement, in that case, yes, land stays is private property. It stays on the tax rolls, and it continues to, you know, the landowner continues to be able to use and manage that land, obviously within whatever the restrictions of the conservation easement that they negotiated with the land trust.
Okay. Jed in Lakota Ray, your turn. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hello.
Yes, what's on your mind?
Good show. Thank you all very much. What you're talking about, the conservation easement and the land trust, but I wanted to talk about repatriation or rematriation. I share Lacouture with the Ojibwa and the Anishinaabe, and my vision was to entrust the lakefront and the trail for shared use, community use, to be preserved in conservation without development or disruption in perpetuity for flora, fauna, public, and native. So I wanted to bring in the sagacity of the grounds, and it's also been told to me that it's perhaps a burial site or a sacred spot. So I don't know how to denominate it or identify it as such or how to proceed and make it so.
Hmm. Jed, thanks for calling. What's your advice in this case, Mark? Mike, excuse me.
Yeah, sure. First of all, I think, repatriation of native land is something that I think is certainly a very important issue and something that, many of our land trust members and land trusts across the country are talking about. How can we help maybe to play a role in furthering some of that work? Specific to that piece of property in Northwest Wisconsin, it would perhaps be worth touching base with the Landmark Conservancy, which is works in Northwest Wisconsin. They work out of they're headquartered out of Menominee, but they cover 20 counties in Northwest Wisconsin. And again, it would be worth, I think, just starting a dialogue with them. Not sure if it would be a perfectly the right fit, but I think that would be a good place to start.
And it's, what is it again? The Landmark?
Oh, Landmark Conservancy. Yep.
Okay. Landmark Conservancy. There you go, Jed. Thank you very much for calling. And Martha in Menominee wondered if you're familiar with the Greenway space and how does that work with a land trust?
Sure. I think that's another maybe broader point to make. It's a great question. Another broader point to make is that land trusts really, are one of many different organizations that are working on, land conservation and public access for recreation here in Wisconsin. And so, certainly agencies like the Department of Natural Resources and local community park programs, county park and rec programs are also play a critical role for protecting our natural resources here in Wisconsin. So I would guess that in many cases, a greenway perhaps would be something that would be under the kind of authority or jurisdiction of, let's say, a municipality. But as I mentioned earlier, it really depends kind of where you are in the state. Many of our land trust members have great and long-running partnerships with their local municipality, local county, and are, they work hand in hand in trying to, continue to improve and expand some of those areas.
Let's take a call from Steve in Wausau. Steve, thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Thank you for taking my call. I heard a caller before talk about when some of these partner groups, like maybe the DNR or the U.S. Forest Service, takes over land to manage it, because most of the land trusts don't have the forestry staff. But when the U.S. government purchases land, like for the National Forest, they purchase it under what's called fee simple conditions, which means there's no strings attached in any of those contracts. So all those conservation easements that may have been part of the donor's wishes, that all becomes wiped out. And that means the U.S. Forest Service can allow mining on it, run a pipeline through it, dam up the rivers and creeks, do whatever they want. So my question is, how can somebody be assured that their dreams of preserving land into perpetuity really become realized, because these state and federal agencies allow this type of development on it, and they don't honor those conservation easements? Thank you.
Mike,
sure, I can't speak to the Forest Service. I'm not sure if there's an example that folks are thinking of. I'm not familiar with land trust donating significant acreage in fee simple to the Forest Service. It certainly may have happened. I'm not familiar with it. I would say, though, that, again, and the federal government may be sort of a different ball of wax in terms of enforcing a conservation easement, but if a land trust were to donate or transfer a piece of property to a municipal agency, a municipal government, a county government, or the state, they can absolutely retain a conservation easement. The land trust can, and that runs with the land in perpetuity, and that is something that they can litigate to enforce the terms of that in the future. And indeed, there's a national program we have a national kind of umbrella group called the Land Trust Alliance, which is based out in Washington, D.C., but they work across the country. And they actually had the foresight of creating essentially an insurance program called Terra Firma, which most of our land trust members in Wisconsin are enrolled in Terra Firma. And that insurance program is essentially a program that would provide funding and resources to help land trusts that are trying to enforce the terms of a conservation easement. So groups that are enrolled in that insurance program have much greater backing to sort of try to enforce the terms than they would just as a standalone kind of, small nonprofit. So I think our community certainly takes those perpetual obligations seriously. And we've been trying to put measures in place to make sure that the resources are there for land trusts to be able to enforce the terms of these agreements, as much as possible.
Thanks again, Steve, for calling. Appreciate it. Let's talk about land trust days. This is your third year of this. What's it all about?
Sure. Yeah. So Wisconsin Land Trust Days is really our effort as a statewide organization to really highlight some fun outdoor events that our local land trusts are putting on throughout the months of August and September, and then just the first weekend of October as well. And so it's both an opportunity to highlight some of the, projects and events that our land trusts are organizing. But I think for your listeners, it's a really nice opportunity to get out and explore some properties, some hidden gems that you just maybe were never aware of here in the state. I mean, I think about the last, 12 to 18 months our experience so far with the pandemic, just the amount of interest there's been in outdoor recreation and people getting outdoors. I think the state park system saw like a 22% increase in visitorship, and it's just been an amazing demand for outdoor recreation. And we're just hopeful that, folks out in the public will be interested in exploring some new places and kind of getting to know their local land trust. So for this year, for Wisconsin Land Trust Days, we actually have 36 events that are scheduled for August and September, and then that first weekend in October. There's also four kind of events that are more like seasonal or run kind of throughout the year. So that includes, 16 events in August and 18 in September and 2 in October. And we're talking about events in pretty much every corner of the state. And just this upcoming weekend, there's six events that are scheduled. And just to give an example of maybe a few of them, one is the annual Ride to the Barns event that a group called the Tall Pines Conservancy is hosting over in Hartford in northern Waukesha County. It's a really nice bike ride that they sort of showcase many of the farms and other properties that they've helped to protect in that region. There's the Mississippi Valley Conservancy in La Crosse is holding a canoeing and kayaking basics. A lot of their work has protected the bluffs right along the Mississippi River. And I think a nice chance to kind of be on the water and be able to look back on some of the great work that they've done to protect those view sheds and those bluffs. And then just one more example, up in Luck, Wisconsin, in northwest Wisconsin, the Landmark Conservancy has got a beginner plant and insect identification hike that's going to be on a segment of the Ice Age Trail up there as well. So really kind of events there's something for everyone over these 2 months. And I think it's a combination of a chance to kind of get to know your local land trust or to crisscross the state and just visit some kind of hidden gems that maybe you weren't aware of beforehand.
And how do people find out? I'm looking at the list of events. It really looks great. How do people get the whole list of events?
Yeah, so we've got a website that's called havefunoutside.org. So havefunoutside.org. You can obviously also find it through our main homepage at gatheringwaters.org. But I also just wanted to highlight, too, in addition to these actual, you know, events that are scheduled for the next couple of months, on that havefunoutside.org website, we also have a map that just shows sort of a cross-section of land trust, Wisconsin land trust properties that are open to the public. It's not an exhaustive list. It's not all of the land trust protected sites, but it's sort of a nice cross-section, a nice showcasing of some of their protected land, again, that's open to the public. So definitely urge folks to check out the upcoming events, but also as you're thinking about places to get outside and explore at any time of year, check out those that map with the land trust properties as well.
Lots of activity around the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Program. Maybe talk about what that program is and what happened in the legislature this year.
Yeah, so the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Program, I think, really is sort of Wisconsin's best source of state funding for land and water protection. It's a program that has provided funding for land trusts, local communities, the Department of Natural Resources and other partners for just over 30 years. So it was first created in a very bipartisan fashion back in 1989 and the funding for it has been renewed periodically ever since then. And as I'm sure a lot of listeners recall that we just wrapped up a contentious state budget debate. And lots of different issues were on the table being discussed during that process, but one important issue in that debate was the future of the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Program. And essentially, if the legislature and the governor couldn't agree on extending funding for the program, it would have sunsetted next year. So it was really urgent, you know, for folks who care about land and water protection. It was just a really urgent time to make sure we got that program renewed. We were pushing for a long-term extension, a 10-year renewal of the program, which is historically how it's been funded. And in the end, again, a contentious state budget debate, we ended up with a four-year extension. The program will continue at the same funding level at about $33 million a year. But I think it's an important victory for us to continue to have this funding, to have that funding available for these organizations that are doing this, you know, work in local communities, have that available for the next 4 years. But we know that 4 years goes by quickly. And we also know that there's just no end to the kind of education that we need to do of elected officials and really explaining to them the impact that, you know, stewardship projects and the program is having in their local district. So, you know, we certainly urge anyone who's listening that, you know, any opportunity that you have to interact with your state legislators or other elected officials, that just reminding them how important kind of land and water protection is and how important the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Program is to that would be much appreciated. I should mention this truly is one of those issue areas that is so incredibly bipartisan in the eyes of the public. The Nature Conservancy in Wisconsin commissioned a poll last summer asking members of the public about whether their support for public funding, for state funding for land and water protection. And it was like 90% plus support, broad support, regardless of political affiliation. So it is one of those sort of diamonds in the rough of an otherwise, you know, pretty divisive time. It's legitimately a very broadly supported bipartisan issue.
And, you know, there's what, 650,000 acres are protected through that program. And the other, and I was looking on, I think it was on your site, 93% of households in Wisconsin are within a mile of a Knowles Nelson investment. So
yeah, that was one of the sort of myths that we had to help to sort of clear up this last time around. I think a lot of times folks think about, you know, land protection and think about the Knowles Nelson program, and they think about sort of protected land kind of out in the middle of nowhere that maybe anyone going to use this, or is, you know, what's the value of this? And we really tried to highlight that, gosh, this program has made investments in every community in every corner of the state, but we still see, again, this tremendous demand for additional investment. And again, I think the increase that we saw in outdoor recreation over the last year, just the stat of the 22% increase of visitorship to state parks, the need for continued kind of investment in the stewardship program and in things like parks and trails and outdoor recreation and in conservation continues to be immensely important. There's a lot to be proud of, a lot to look back on in terms of what the program has accomplished, but I think still a lot yet to be done.
Yeah, but it's amazing that 93% of households are within a mile of one of those investments. And I think it was something like 99% of households are within 5 miles. So, I mean, almost nothing. You can ride your bike over.
It was really fascinating talking to elected officials, and we finally mapped out where all of these projects are around the state and showing them right in their backyards where some of these investments had been made. And the number of times we heard like a legislator say, oh my gosh, like that's where I walk my dog every day. Like I never knew that was a Knowles Nelson project. We've got a website, knowlesnelson.org, and we've done, our team has done an amazing job of mapping out these projects, and definitely would recommend folks go and check out some of those maps and just kind of really, I think it helps increase the appreciation for the breadth of impact this program has had.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, it's been, Mike, a great pleasure talking with you again. I hope we have a chance to do this again. Thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
I really appreciate it, Larry. Thank you so much.
Yeah, Mike Carlson, Executive Director of Gathering Waters. It's a great programs going on in the state, and I hope we can, personally hope we can keep them all going. We're going to turn our attention to birds, and the world's bird population is facing a lot of threats. We'll talk about that next with our guest from Audubon. I'm Larry Mailer. You're listening to the Ideas Network.